Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome to Hoovering, the podcast about eating. I'm Jessica Fostercue. I love eating as much as anything else in the world, but also it sometimes brings me conflict, shame, and all sorts of other things that are rubbish. It's complicated and I think fascinating. This is a conversation with an interesting soul, not just about food, but about gobbling it up, or if you will, hoovering. Hello, welcome to Hoovering. If you have a good time here listening to this, I would be so grateful if you could tell other people about it. Rate, review, subscribe, and share it all around to everyone. I have to ask if you have any spare moolah, then I'm on this magic site called Patreon, where for various monthly amounts from as tiny as $2, I swap you exclusive rewards. I don't like asking for money, but I'm doing it, aren't I? Go to patreon.com/thehooveringpod. Admin complete. Let's get into this week's chat, shall we? I'm up in Yorkshire with the driest, most deadpanniest, and biggest into cookingiest comedian ever, Peter Brush. There's a surprise reaction to me likening him to Hitler. We get deep into the impacts of sugar and sleep, and there's some fascinating thoughts about radical ideas and how we emote around our politics in general. I'm with Peter Brush, and we're eating our lunch out and about. Where is it?
What, the actual place or the area?
Both, please.
We're in Leeds, in Chapel Allerton, Leeds, at Nichols Vegetarian Deli.
And we've got a really nice smoothie.
Bye, John. Bye, Dad.
As someone's saying goodbye to John. Everybody knows everybody's name apart from us.
It's the way I want to keep it.
Famously friendly, Peter.
What is it called? It's like drinking out of a jar with a handle.
What we've done is waited sort of about, I don't know, half an hour plus.
Yeah, so we can
to
sit
get,
right next to the coffee machine.
So we can get
machine.
The quiet booth, and it turns out it's next to the smoothie maker and the coffee machine. It's called a sunrise smoothie with mango banana and fresh orange juice. It's really nice. I've got a big chunk of banana and that's it. That's my least favourite bit of it, but everything else about it I love. How do you feel about these new paper straws everywhere, Peter? It's a legal requirement.
Right. I think we've got Michael Gove to thank for that, haven't we?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good thing.
I think probably is.
Somebody told me that they're upset about how mushy they go in your mouth, but I think that's better than the sort of dead coral reef of the plastic ones.
Yeah, I guess so. We've still got load of plastic straws in my house that we've not gotten rid of.
You're going to hoard them for
Well, I want to secretly throw them out.
Yes, look, here's our lunch.
SLT.
Thank you.
Oh, that's
amazing.
Yeah, cool.
Whoa. I'm having an SLT. It's a vegan sausage, lettuce and tomato with added avocado and massive chips. I'm going to take that reserved for Leah sign off. She's gone now.
Wow, thanks a lot.
This looks amazing. Thank
would you like any sauces or dressings with it?
Yeah, you do like the hot sauce, do you?
I think. I can check for you.
I'm sure I've had a hot sauce here.
A hot sauce would be lovely, and all ketchup as well, please. Thank you. Wow, this looks fit. Can I take a picture of yours, please?
Go on,
please?
Yum,
yum, yum. I'll do an aerial shot. This is exciting. Well, let's just eat it up. Mm. I'll try and remember to ask you questions in the middle. Mm-hmm. Too hungry not to just eat it to start with, really. Oh, wow. Look at all those things.
Oh, yeah, thanks. That's great.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's good.
Oh, look at them. Whoa. Windmill Products hot pepper sauce. Yeah, no. Product of Barbados. I'm trying that.
Mm.
Do you want some first?
Yeah, okay. I'm never sure how much of this stuff to brave on you, really.
I'm going to try. My chips come with a tomato chutney that's getting tried now. Mmm. Oh, that's so nice. It's really sweet. Do you want to try my tomato?
Well, I'll put a chip in it or something.
Yeah, dip a chip in it, Peter. Oh, it's so... I think it must have really slow-cooked onions in it or something.
I never really discussed food before, like, in terms of, like... Because, I mean, obviously I like it, stuff, but...
Not everyone does.
Do I need to, like, break it down intellectually or something?
No, you don't. I mean, you could have a comedic attempt at that, if you like.
Because I don't want it to be
Did you have an intellectual response to the tomato chutney?
Well, no, I just mean I was worried it would be like looking at a painting and I have to be like, oh, yeah, you can really see the strokes of weather.
No.
And I'm pretty sure I understand paintings, but I can't really articulate why. So I just want to be able to say it moves me, and that's it.
Yeah,
so
that's
I'd like to say the same with food. Like, I don't want to break it down by like, oh, you can really get the tarragon or something. It moves me.
I've had an emotional response.
Yeah.
It's as much as you're getting. That's fair enough. My sandwich is fit. I think that's probably going to be my best description of it. The veggie sausages are really herby. Everything else is just perfect together, isn't it? Can't have a, like, sausage, lettuce and tomato sandwich with avocado in that isn't glorious. The big chunky chips are lush. We were at Edinburgh Show. Your new one is called Chasing Snails.
Yeah.
But have you ever eaten a snail?
I may have done when I was a kid and we went to Calais for the day as a kid. I think it was one of those things where you're in France for the first time and and you're like, oh, we really want to have frog's legs and snails, and then you can't find them anywhere because people don't actually eat them.
They're just for tourists.
Yeah, I think we might have eventually, so I either had one or the other, I think, but I'm not 100% sure. I think it happened.
I think I remember having a frog's leg on a pizza as a child in France. And just being, not even realising it had happened to me. You just thought it was a tiny strip of chicken. What is that? Did you do, like, travelling overseas as a kid? That's quite adventurous for a kid to have been up for eating a snail.
I think I was always, you know, I don't know if daring is the right sort of, but I quite like the idea that other people thought it was a bit out there, so I should definitely do it.
You know? Oh, nice, that's good.
Yeah.
I think that's very cool to be like non-conformy as a kid on the food front. I think lots of kids.
I think I was, but I might be over romanticising my rebelliousness as a child.
Remembering yourself as a bit more outgoing than you were.
Yeah, like my. Like, whenever I go and visit my family and stuff, and my girlfriend sees pictures of me as a kid, she's always like, oh, you were actually quite a nice kid. But the way you talk about your childhood is as if you were, like, fucking David Copperfield or someone in Bleak, and was it in some Dickens novel or something, as if I was some misunderstood artist as a child that was alone and stuff like that. It's the way I sort of talk about my childhood. That's how it felt to me.
Like a young Hitler.
He
was a misunderstood artist, wasn't he?
That's in my show this year.
Is it?
Yeah.
I predicted a bit
that's
of your
why
show.
That's why I looked a little bit sort of startled, because that's one of the themes
in
my show.
I thought
show.
You were startled because I likened you to a young Hitler, Peter, but it turns out it's just because I'd hit the nail on the head and predicted a bit of your comedy.
It is. It's because the show's about artistry and God and snails. So,
amazing.
Yeah.
I saw an interview you did after you did the BBC competition. When was that? A few years ago?
2013.
Yeah.
I've achieved nothing since, to be fair. So.
It's not true. But when they asked you what was the best thing about the competition, you said having a sandwich once the results were over. do you not eat at all when you're nervous?
I was very nervous that day, and I think I travelled all the way down to London from here.
Leeds.
Yeah. And I was particularly nervous for that. And so, yeah, that was really satisfying having the sandwich, because my stomach was playing up a little bit.
Oh, no, yeah, of course. You're so scared.
After I'd done it, it was such a relief to eat a sandwich.
Do you remember what sandwich it was?
I think it was probably a crappy sort of an egg and cress one from Boots or something.
Sometimes they're amazing. When they're good, they're very good. M&S is the best egg and cress, right?
Yeah, probably. I do like Marks and Spencer's, but I don't know. I just feel like it's not cool to be middle class, is it? So I just don't... I'm not sure I should champion Marks and Spencer's as much as... But the food is good there, so...
The food is amazing, especially sandwiches. I don't, it's so true. It's really not cool to be middle class.
It isn't.
But I really...
It's cool if you've got one working class relative, you must play that up as much as possible.
I think it's surely less cool when you're ragingly middle class, as am I, to pretend really hard that you have any working class relevance, like in your, or what's the word, heritage at all.
I mean, I definitely have.
I definitely have, as far back as once you get to grandparents.
Yeah, I think our grandparents' generation was facilitated to be able to move from, like, so much more than probably any other generation ever before. So, I like a greengrocer grandfather and a dinner lady grandmother.
Did you?
Well, she said she was a cook, but she wasn't.
That's really funny. She lied. I like it that she's upped her status.
You know, and they, like, bought their council house they lived in for 50 years and stuff like that. So,
is this all in Essex? Is that where you grew up?
They're from East London, but...
Okay.
Essex is full of people that moved from East London. You know, sold their council house and moved, or, you know, so my nan is still alive, she still lives in East London. Yeah,
yeah. Whereabouts?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Well,
or is it not cool?
She might not say that, but it's
I suppose if you grew up somewhere and it changes that drastically.
There has been a lot of change there, and, you know, I'm not going to say anything else.
Because she's a racist.
Read between the lines if you want.
Is she likely to listen to this podcast?
No.
No.
She did listen to the BBC final, actually, to be fair. Yeah.
Oh, that's sweet.
Because I spoke to her the next day, she went, "You did very well." I said, "Did you vote for me?" She went, "No, we don't know how to work the phone."
Oh, bless her. That's very sweet of her to have listened. Who did the cooking in your house when you were growing up?
Both my nans are very cooky.
Are they?
So, yeah.
The one that lives in East London?
Well, she was a cook, apparently.
Yeah, dinner lady. You're suspiciously good at serving this up, but it tastes like shit.
What's all these massive ladles?
Say scrum diddlyumptious.
No!
And then you can be in my podcast.
Scrum diddlyumptious.
5 second rule, yes or no?
I get more paranoid about that as I get older.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
OK, can imagine.
And the floor in my house, we've not cleaned it for since we've been in there.
How long have you been there?
6 years. I've hoovered it.
But that counts as cleaning it, doesn't it?
Not like...
Do you mean like a deep shampooing?
Yeah. If something falls on there, I don't really think it's a good idea to put it.
Very sensible, I suppose.
Right.
Does that mean you're heartbroken when you do drop food?
Yeah, you do have to just kiss it goodbye, I think.
I've eaten some food off some terrible floors.
I keep wanting to put this hot sauce on everything. Just,
I know, and then everything just tastes the hot sauce, yeah. But it is really nice hot sauce. It's really made it for me, that hot sauce, and these homemade massive chunky chips.
Yeah,
they've got three chunky potatoes worth. In terms of our eating, do you plan what you're going to have?
Well,
or do you have the same things quite often?
I do have I plan things a lot, mainly budgetary, really. Yeah, I have large meals and then I sort of eat them for a few days.
That's a good shout. Freeze stuff.
Not every single time. Yeah, freezing's good because then you don't have to eat it the next day. And I stretch a food budget very, very well. I'm very, very proud of that.
That's awesome. No, that's really. That's also really interesting, though. So, have you got like? Have you got a go-to thing for like on a budget? What's your go-to stuff?
There's a great chili in that. Anna Jones is first.
I should say, Peter and I first sort of became mates swapping recipes, and you introduced me to Anna Jones, who I've plugged and used recipes of relentlessly on this podcast.
I don't favourite many tweets, but I tweeted her saying that I thought she was great, and she replied and saying thank you, and so I favoured that. That's in my list of the four favourite tweets I've done. Once when I was pissed, I listened to The Smiths when I got back, and I listened to Oscillate Wildly, and before it was an instrumental, and I thought it was great, so I tweeted Johnny Marr when I was drunk saying, oh, it's just brilliant, and he replied to that, which is like just,
you get a lot of replies.
No, I don't
bold...
actually. I mean,
well, that's what they haven't been many favourites.
Donald Trump never replies.
Well, he hasn't brought any musical recipes out that you're in awe of. As soon as he does that, you'll be able to send him something nice.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, so yeah, she's got a recipe.
She's got a chilli, which, now, controversially, puts ginger in a chilli, which I think is a bold move, I think.
Yeah.
But it's made with grains in the chilli. So you put whatever you want. I mean, the recipe says quinoa and bulgur, but you can put, I don't know, anything else in the grain-related.
Does that mean you don't need rice with it, really, then?
No, but I still do, because I can... Yeah, be quite hungry.
Yeah,
That's a brilliant chili recipe. I think the chipotle kind of makes it.
So good, smoked chilies.
So that you can make a huge batch of that.
Nice.
Freeze about half of it, and then you've got a couple of days eating. But the great thing about chili is you can have it with rice one day, you can have it on a jacket potato the next day.
Yeah, lush.
I've even had it on like a little bit on the side of like a breakfast tortilla, where I had you have a breakfast tortilla with fried eggs, avocado, and have that instead of
such a good idea. Yeah, that's a really good shout.
And it's a very cost effective recipe as well.
Yeah, I agree. So, there's stuff that you is this other than that chili, are there like general shopping staples that you would say on a budget are the best things to have in? Jacket potatoes, rice.
I don't have jacket potatoes very often.
Don't you? I love them, but you're right. I don't make them often enough.
You don't make enough toppings for them, If I'm at the very end of a shopping cycle, and you get a shop every 2 weeks, so the first week is always amazing. You feel like plentiful food, and the second week is like, oh, we better open a tin of beans at some point.
Although beans and a jacket potato is lush.
Mm. And you can make baked beans much more interesting by just adding chipotle paste is great to add to baked beans, but also smoked paprika as well. Or even just like fry a bit of chilli or onion and garlic before you put the baked beans in the in
that's
the saucepan.
Great, it's just pimping your beans.
Yeah, just pimp your beans.
Peter's pimped beans. You should do a budget recipe book like Jack Monro.
I'll leave it to Jack Monro.
She's pretty awesome. Have you got any of her books?
No.
I've got one I'll lend you. It's really good. Okay, mind you, cool. I think what's great about her is that she's sort of giving... The idea is that it's very much for people that might not necessarily feel confident enough to try cooking at all, whereas I think you're probably beyond that, to be honest, Peter, by the sounds of it. Way beyond.
Mm.
And what about your partner? You live with your partner, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
And does she feel similar about food to you, or do you have arguments?
Well, she likes to eat it, but she doesn't cook very well. She never cooks.
She never ever cooks?
Never cooks. If I'm a,
Would she starve without you?
No, she would eat frozen food.
Okay.
And sort of those sort of tortellini packets that you get in.
Nice. 3 minutes fresh.
Yeah, stick a bit of pesto with it or something.
Yeah.
But no, she doesn't like cooking.
Really?
See, I find it very therapeutic.
Right.
And stuff. Although at the moment I do have an awful lot of time because I'm trying to write an Edinburgh show, of course.
I think that's a nice way of spending your downtime from your writing and gigging, is cooking.
If I wasn't a comic, what I would like to do is I would like to be a cook, but not for like in a restaurant, because that seems very stressful, but just have like one family of very like-minded people that I cooked for, and I lived in their like outhouse shed sort of thing,
like a nanny but just a live-in chef. Basically, what a lovely, that is a quite a potentially lovely life, as long as you got on with the family.
Yeah.
And would you have to eat with them?
No,
you'd be,
because this
to
is
eat
my job, I could just do what I want.
You do get people that live, very rich people that have live-in chefs, and they often, then sometimes they have a nutritionist as well.
And I don't think I'm good enough to really do it, to be honest, because it's still going to be, also they would have to be, I wouldn't want them to be meat-eating either, which I don't mean in a sort of like, but just because I haven't cooked with meat for years, so I wouldn't do a very good job.
Well, I've got so many questions off the back of that then. So... I mean, to be honest, I think you're doing yourself down. I think you're that into cooking was splendid. And I think a lot of private chefs aren't trained chefs. They're people who, done a career change because they love cooking, decided to go and do something they love. So it's just not blagging as a, sounds like they don't deserve to be there, but ultimately I think there's all sorts of routes into that kind of life if you really wanted it. But you're too good at comedy, don't do it yet. But also I want to talk about, so have you been vegetarian for ages, have you?
Well, that's strange, having a girlfriend who doesn't cook. She doesn't, she's the vegetarian.
Oh really?
Originally.
Right.
Just I wasn't when we met, but I've been converted by the propaganda and everything, so pretty much.
Well, it might not be propaganda.
I mean, I did it very slowly and I didn't make a big deal out of it.
Right.
Really, when I stopped eating meat, I felt very, very good.
Cool.
For, like, energy levels-wise and stuff.
Really?
Like that. Yeah, and not to be too graphic, but, like...
Tummy was better.
Yes.
Yeah. I felt the same when I went... well, I didn't really go vegetarian. I just went straight to flirting with veganism. And I did exactly this. I can't pretend it had any impact on my energy. I think, for me, that's... But then that might... It was all... I've only ever been doing these things since I had a young kid, so... Mm. When you're not... getting loads of sleep, then you can't really be any sort of reasonable judge of that. But I do definitely think it's really good for your tummy to have less.
I mean, the energy levels thing is very important when you're trying to be. When I had a proper job, I was just like, do fucking anything to get through the day.
Yeah,
like just
was it in an office?
Drink as much, sort of. It was in a hospital. So
okay, what was it?
Wasn't confined to the office, but it was audit work.
Okay, in hospital.
Yeah, that makes it sound grander than it is. It was, I got away with a lot of stuff, so it suited me, but I would just, like, drink as much coffee to get through the day, and I just want to get through it. Making coffee is great at work as well, because you don't actually have to be in the office, you can go to the kitchen for 5 minutes to just do something, but
that isn't
sitting with your colleague.
When I was temping, I used to drink a fuckload of coffee, but also... lots and lots of water, and to the point where my body would get used to that, and then at the weekends I'd get headaches or I couldn't keep up the pattern of water I'd been guzzling, because you just sat still all day. I don't think I'd go back to it, you know. I just have so much respect for, well, all my friends with proper jobs and everyone in the world with proper jobs.
But what I was sort of getting at was I started doing comedy, and only comedy,
yeah,
and I'm trying to spend my days productively. I couldn't drink loads of coffee, and I couldn't eat biscuits or anything because I noticed my energy levels would fluctuate massively during the day, and I would crash. And I think it was the sugar more than the caffeine, actually.
Yeah.
And so now, I still don't always follow the rules, but I realise if I'm eating better during the day, I'm much more alert and productive when I'm trying to work on stuff. Which is a shame, because in a way, I'd still kind of like to eat all the crap and drink loads of coffee.
I've had jobs where I'm in a writer's room, and they bring you constant coffee and biscuits, or there's constant coffee and biscuits on the go, whether they're brought to you or you've gone and got them or not, and it fucks you up, I think, the sugar and the caffeine combined anyway. Like, it just means that if you stop for lunch, even just for half an hour, that after that point, the battle with your own...
Yeah, I think after lunch is always...
attitude is so hard. I think a walk can do wonders in those situations, like post-lunch, to slay that post-lunch, or a nap, really. Maybe these Mediterranean countries where you have a nap. Well, apparently the siesta after lunch is a dying thing.
Right.
Because everybody's moving over to horrible, horrible long working days.
Yeah.
It's a sad thing, isn't it? I really romanticise the idea of a long French-Spanish lunch followed by a little kip.
I never sleep during the day, though. I can't do it.
So
even if I, for some reason, haven't slept or... I've given myself the time. I never fall asleep during the day. Even if I've skipped a night.
Really?
Just can't do it.
There's an amazing app which my therapist gave me called The Honest Guys. It's not an app. It's just on YouTube. And if you would like to nap in the day ever, but it sort of talks you down, and it doesn't always get me to sleep, but it always gets me to a point of like a trance, which isn't as restful as sleep, but it's more restful than not having slept. You go into a kind of, you can still hear it. It must be close to, I've never been hypnotised, but it must be close to that kind of thing where you're like really, really sort of zen, and you're not letting all the thoughts that are in your head in, basically. That you know that point you get to just before you go to sleep? It's quite a nice feeling.
Yeah, I think
kind of slipping. It just sort of puts you there and keeps you there, even if it doesn't get you to sleep. But often it gets me off to sleep.
Whenever that feeling, it's always like, you're nearly there, nearly there.
But then as soon as you're conscious of you're nearly there, you've ruined it.
Yeah.
The other thing, though, I find if I do have a nap in the day, is that I wake up starving, even if I had the nap because I'd just had lunch. I wonder what's going on there. A bit like your thing where you were saying if you eat just before bed, you wake up even hungrier for breakfast.
Mm.
Do you think sometimes your body goes, the more you're doing it, the more you want to do it with eating stuff?
I reckon it's got to be a scientific thing rather than a...
You're not prepared to just do some conjecture with me, Peter?
Evidently not.
Have you ever had a food fight?
Don't think I have.
I feel like I'm just asking
you're
the most sensible person
one,
in the world. No, I'm absolutely not. I'm too full for a food fight.
I'm not.
I'm so full.
I think, I am sensible, I guess, but I probably always was more sensible than especially at university when I had lots of very much tear-away friends. I was still...
tear-away friends.
It was a voice of reason still, but...
Really?
Yeah, in a way. I still had fun though, of course. But
do you drink alcohol?
Not as much as I used to.
Did you used to be a bit of a tearaway?
Well, no, I don't know about that. I'm not sure it was alcohol so much, but I think alcohol is quite bad for your sleep. That's why I've stopped.
Yeah.
Because even if you've just had a few drinks and you're not really that drunk, I don't sleep deeply in a way. And the next day is right off again.
Sleep. I really want you to be able to sleep in the day. I feel like we speak a lot about how much sleep or how annoying it is when you don't get the sleep that you want.
I think, are we naturally supposed to sleep during the day? Because there's all those things in there about how in the old days before they had electric lighting, they would go to sleep when it started to get dark, but then often they would wake up in the middle of the night, do some stuff for a couple of hours and then go back to sleep again.
Exactly, just our circadian cycles have been forced into a kind of capitalist working structure, basically.
Yeah, but Jeremy Corbyn would change that, I'm sure.
Do you think? Well, that's one bloody reason to vote for him, if we get to have a few more lions.
Yeah. A few more lions, a few more bank holidays.
A few more siestas. Oh, Jeremy Corbyn. Either Steve Gribben or Nick Doody described Jeremy Corbyn as a thin Santa, which I thought was very nice. Very nice. So do you not drink at all now?
I do. But I try not to. I just try not to.
You don't try not to be drunk. Yeah, I think that's very sensible.
I miss not being able to be somewhat intoxicated and listen to music a lot, because
just do it every now and again. Also, if you've not been drinking much for ages, then
probably need one or two.
It won't take you many. Yeah.
Then maybe you won't feel so bad. But
well, I don't know.
I mean, I had a bit of Madonna on in the car the other day, and I was just like, oh, it'd be nice to sort of, I don't know, jump about. I mean, I was driving, so I couldn't have done that anyway.
Not drunk, I hope, anyway.
No.
But you could have jumped about, a bit of chair jumping.
Mm-hmm.
So when you did used to be drunk, if you had a hangover, what was your go-to thing to eat with a morning after the night before?
Yeah, I don't know. Cannabis, probably.
I'd have a spliff, please, to eat.
Yeah, I think I probably did. I did used to start the day that way. But
did you?
Yeah, but I think that I always thought that people were saying that you should have a fry up when you have a hangover. I've always thought that was absolutely bollocks.
I really
don't think that. I always never felt good afterwards.
Right.
Sometimes I would struggle to eat for hours and hours and hours when I had a hangover, and I think that's a terrible thing to eat, because I just think all the grease kind of sits on your stomach and stuff like that.
People go either way. Sometimes people crave fat and salt like that, and and comfort, I think, and the minerals and the warmth of that. But I think sometimes, which sounds maybe more like you, people desperately I want the minerals of fresh vegetables and something that tastes clean and sort of clearing, one of the many clear soups you can get. Lots of people have suggested, and I've asked this, or...
I don't think any... I'd like someone to actually genuinely tell me something like that works, because
It just makes you feel psychologically better.
The hope that there's some magic cure.
Yeah.
I don't think there is. I think you just have to live with the pain of it. You've made a mistake and you're going to have to live with the consequences.
Yeah.
There's probably a Brexit metaphor in there.
Yeah, I think paracetamol are probably the only sensible things to eat that were actually going to help. But I just meant, what's the sort of thing that you fancy?
I'm not sure. I can't remember the last time I was really, really drunk. But...
Oh, I've accidentally asked you another memory question, forgetting that these are pointless questions.
It may have been last Edinburgh that I got really drunk by accident.
Yeah. By accident?
Because, you just meet up with someone and they're like... I was like, oh, do you want to get a coffee? And they're like, oh, actually, I'm going to have a pint. Do you want one? Okay. And then someone else offers you one and you think, oh, I'll be okay for two. And then you hadn't eaten and then,
Yeah. And then you've had another five.
So, yeah, pretty much. But...
Has food ever made you really ill?
When I was on holiday in Turkey once, and like a family holiday,
yeah,
I was really ill. After eating those vine leaves, stuffed vine leaves,
dolma, I think they're called, I really like them actually. I love them.
And I remember being sick, and I didn't make it to the toilet. I threw up all over the shower. So I was probably about 12 or 13.
Oh.
And I could taste the vine leaves. I don't know if that's what made me ill or not. But strangely, people always have stories I can't drink a certain brand of whiskey anymore because it reminds me of being sick and I can taste it and stuff. But strangely, it hasn't affected me at all. I still really like those vine leaves.
That's excellent news. I think also you can cure almost all of those things.
Maybe it's cathartic.
You'll put things off. Like a penitence. I think it's your equivalent of
the worst
whipping
film
yourself.
Ever.
I'm in my tum.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Do you know what you've reminded me of when I went on holiday with my, I think I was about 14, maybe a bit younger, maybe 14, went on holiday with my dad and stepmum to Fuerteventura in the Canary Islands on a package holiday. And there was obviously some like half board included because we'd have like dinner there every day. And I think I was already like drinking a bit with friends before youth club and stuff in secret. But, and my dad was always quite a naughty facilitator of that. But there was some sangria, which... And so I'd be allowed a few beers, because they didn't give a shit. I mean, the bar staff, as much as my dad. But there was some sangria, which... There was, like, a kid's sangria and an adult sangria. And I don't know whether it was a massive, awful mix-up or whatever, but I remember I got absolutely horrid, totally wangled. And I was already sleeping on the sofa, and they were in the room, so they sort of had... It was called a two-bed apartment, but it was basically a sofa bed and a bedroom. And I woke up in the night, and I'd been sick, but I hadn't remembered it. But I could see the trail of where I'd been sick. I had like dollops of sickle down my front, and they were like little, like a Ansel and Gretel trail of sticks. But it was all olives. But I'd say I was put off olives for about 6 years, and now I definitely love them again. Until I remember this story, I probably now I've maybe ruined them again by remembering this story for you.
Well, if I have done that to you, then I do apologise.
Well, I did it to myself. You've got nothing to apologise for. Has there ever been a situation where you ate something you didn't want to eat out of embarrassment or awkwardness?
I had to eat a bit of sausage a few years ago when I had stopped eating meat.
Yeah.
Because I felt really, really awkward at the B&B I was staying in, because she just cooked for me without like asking any questions, and I hadn't said anything. So I don't think I ate the sausage. I think I had a bit of the bacon, because I just imagined that wasn't as horribly processed as the sausage. I just felt sick about the idea of eating the sausage, but I did eat a small, just out of politeness, and then sort of said, "Oh, I'm not hungry enough to eat the rest," even though I suspiciously ate all of the toast and all of the eggs and all of the beans and stuff. But that was the last time I did that.
What, so, did you like it, the bacon?
No, actually, it was weird because it's like, I think it must be like when people quit smoking, and suddenly smoking becomes horrible.
Yeah.
Like, people always say, "Oh, doesn't the smell of bacon tempt you into eating meat and stuff like that?" But I actually am so past the point now that I actually find it quite nauseating.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, I think we were talking.
That stock line's not going to work on me.
But you miss bacon, or bacon will sway you back. We were talking about this earlier. I think there's something so interesting in the fact that the longer you have a particular diet, so whether it's like without meat or without meat and dairy, especially if you're all vegan, like identify as vegan and are fully kind of in that world where you're vegan for animal cruelty reasons, or vegetarian for animal cruelty reasons, as well as environmental ones and ethical ones, more broadly, then or economic ones. The longer you do it, as I understand it, the more Well, not, yeah, and from my experience, but the more repulsive the idea that anyone doing it becomes. Mm. And I don't know whether that's a good or a bad thing, because then you're closing off your facility for empathy a bit.
No, I agree.
Okay, yeah, I mean, yeah, I mean, I can understand it. I can understand, and because it's a moral horror.
Yeah, but it is like any form. We were saying briefly earlier on about the link to it being like a radicalisation of something.
Yeah, who was that guy you said?
This was specifically said by Majid Nawaz, who's the founder of Quilliam, and.
He was an Islamic extremist,
but now works for an anti-extremism charity or body.
Quilliam, right. And now he's an LBC presenter.
There's a few other people on it called Ed Hussein's the other guy that's living more common. And they're interesting people. But so he's sort of like against any sort of form of radical thought or any sort of purist dogma or something.
Yeah.
Because you can kind of see that. So obviously I sort of side with the vegan arguments and stuff, but I'm on that side of the fight to a degree, but you know,
in terms of like mass farming and slaughterhouses,
I don't like all that stuff, where was I going with that?
No. He'd likened it. You were telling me he's likened veganism to extremist religion.
Yeah, because he was saying, I think he took particular objection to the people using the phrase meat is murder, because then broke down how, you know, when you actually think about what murder actually is, if you feel, I'm not going to be able to get this right. There was a clip of him on the LBC.
I'll find it and add it in the podcast notes.
But I think sometimes I think he's saying stuff because he's trying to stoke debate rather than necessarily.
That's LBC's thing.
Yeah.
Right?
And I quite like that, because I think too many times these days, I mean, I sort of believe in everything having a bit of nuance to it and such. And anyway, I'm not really into purity so much, but I think I quite like people that do just stoke things, not hopefully in an offensive way, but are just like. I think Christopher Hitchens was kind of like that as well, just sort of say stuff and not necessarily always 100% believe it, but just put some point. He'd just come out and say Diana was awful or Mother Teresa was awful and here's why, just so that there was something out there that, you know, like
shit stirring, but in a good way.
It provokes debate.
Provocative, that's the word.
Exactly, but these people, you know, journalists and stuff, are probably have cause to do that, I think, that it isn't.
That's all. I think it's a lot of people. We need people whose job it is to do that. Otherwise, we will know. No one will ever change an opinion. Mm. It's so hard to make a person change an opinion, ever. Anyway, isn't it? Apparently, extremely rare that anyone honestly changes what they think. Unless it's done over a very slow, slow course of time. And actually, if you go from being.
Well, that's why telling people that they're wrong never works, because you just get your natural reaction would be to be defensive about that position anyway and double down probably.
Totally, so. And I think comedians can delude themselves that their job's quite important, because storytelling and making people laugh about a thing, even if they disagree with it, is, I think, one of the few ways in which sometimes people can potentially then muse on a thing afterwards. I began flirting with veganism because of Simon Amstel's one-hour comedy.
I watched that. Yeah.
Garnish.
It's weird because that's, even though I like...
I laughed all the way through it. Like, you know, it wasn't roaring, but I chuckled at bits of it, and bits of it really made me laugh. Didn't think, you know, that was it, that was the end of that. I couldn't stop thinking about it for the next month. Did you not like it?
No. I didn't like it.
No? Just not funny?
No, not really. I don't think it really... It's probably not right to say laid it on pretty thick or anything.
Yeah.
But I just felt like...
There was a real
smugness to it, which I don't think was ironic.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what turned me off. I think the messenger is always very important, you know, like... And to me, it just didn't, you know, even though the message was right, I just think that the tone of it I didn't really like very much. But
oh, really? That's so funny. I thought it was really unpreachy and just funny. And I thought it was relatively self-aware in the sense that the way it ripped the piss out of early kind of pro-vegan campaigns and stuff.
Maybe.
What it didn't acknowledge now is, like we've been touching on a little bit, the kind of ludicrousness sometimes of, well, generally animal rights activists' kind of willingness or bent towards violence against people who meet.
And then you turn into like PETA and stuff, don't you?
Yeah.
You're like, you know, I wish they wouldn't say some of the things they say sometimes. Yeah. But
well, it's that meat is murder, isn't it? Basically, it's that idea. There were bits of it.
It's kind of what I was sort of saying earlier: is that you can agree with the sentiments and the message and stuff, but the way you say something is very, very important.
Yeah.
And it can really, you know, people don't realise how much they're turning people off to what I consider to be the correct ways. Like, I don't think a lot of the left wing at the moment make that mistake by just, you know, the way that they conduct debate puts people off more than the actual, some of the correctness of where they're coming from.
I couldn't agree more. I think certainly in terms of social media world,
I mean, just being correct about something doesn't mean you're going to win an argument, really. It's just you have to be, you know,
politically correct about something, you mean?
No, just to be, to have the right analysis of something.
Yeah.
You have to still try and bring people on board rather than scare them off. And I think the opposite kind of is happening.
No, well, also, what, it's like you say that, I couldn't agree more. Anything that's conducive to debate, even if it fires you up. So sometimes I listen to LBC, or I certainly used to before I got really into podcasts, actually, but I put LBC on for half an hour of an evening just to get really fucked off because of the people phoning in. It happens on the Jeremy Vine show as well. Both those shows, people will phone in that will make me feel, you know, violently angry at the state of humanity. But actually, if that's what lots of people are thinking, and it gets me thinking, and then I try and make myself think, they honestly think they're the right people and they're the kind people. So if they think they're right and they think they're kind, what if there's a universe within and this is it? I'm the wrong one. Like, how do we definitely know we're the goodies, or that we've got the nail on the head? I don't think anyone ever does. Anything that's conducive to debate is good, and anything that's not isn't, right? Because then you've decided you're right and that's it, then all the doors are closed. And I couldn't agree more in terms of the left, certainly in terms of Twitter and everything. When someone has a disagreeable opinion, the mass movement and the bile they get and how shut down they get, it means you go, well, I'm scared then to even ask questions about these things I don't understand. How can anyone be perfectly woke when things are changing at the pace that they are now?
I don't have a problem.
You can try. That's all you can do to be a good ally to all kind of oppressed groups and minorities and philosophies, is just to want to learn and want to learn. And that can't happen, and you can't convert people if you're sneering at them and shutting them down for even having a question.
Well, it's all Brexit. It's all the whole, like, as soon as Brexit happened and everyone, it was the whole, like, smugness of, everyone that, like, 52% of the population are stupid and wrong and have fallen for something on a bus. But that's not, you know, that's not necessarily, well, that can't really be the case. I mean, you must think really little of people if you think that that's, you know.
Yeah, people that don't live in cities or extremely wealthy pockets.
But I mean, that's where it all changed. I mean, actually, I think a lot of this changed for me after the 2015 election, when obviously everyone I was hanging around was like, oh, we're going to get rid of this Conservative government.
Yeah,
and
it didn't happen.
Will be the thing. And then obviously that didn't happen. And I was suddenly like, hang on, you know, there's a whole world out there, or a whole country out there of people that don't have this view. And I was, you know, then you start questioning things a bit more. And I think Jeremy Corbyn becoming Labour leader moved, made sure that there was a much more binary choice. So then when you're sort of in the middle of that, sort of trying to be more objective, you've got much more stark options, which kind of, and then you start questioning, you know, why people think a certain way, and it's good to do that.
Yeah, you know? I agree.
It's like, instead of sneering at people for necessarily being, you know, I don't think 52% of the country are arseholes or anything.
No, or morally abhorrent, or thick, or no, I couldn't agree more. They've had a different life experience to you that's led to a different decision at that time.
I mean, I think it's the wrong.
And also, I was boggled with Brexit as to why we were so surprised, on the basis that our mass media, as in tabloids and sometimes broadsheets, had flirted with it, but I felt like for my entire adult life, the majority of the press have been saying that the EU is evil and awful. So why are we surprised that everybody's agreed with that? I mean, it's been the Daily Mail's agenda since it began.
Yeah.
So, and that's the most read paper, that and some of the most read papers. So if everybody's reading that the EU's awful for their entire adult lives, surprise, surprise, they voted to leave it.
Did you know, surprisingly, that the Daily Mail is the, I think it's the only paper in the UK that's read more by women than men.
Is it?
Isn't that interesting?
I don't know what that says, really. I think it feels like it's probably all the same news.
The wives of Middle England, isn't it?
Is it? I don't know. It feels like all the same news as all the other tabloids, but without the tits, isn't it? And written in slightly longer, more intellectual prose.
They've cornered a brilliant market because they're like, they're not tabloidy, but they're not broadsheet. And no other paper was kind of like that, were they? Apart from the
Express, fascists.
Yeah, but like, people might, it's a perfect market for someone to think, oh, I don't want to read a tabloid, I want to read some proper news, but I don't want to read a broadsheet because they're too much. And no other papers were that size with that kind of like middle way. So I reckon they probably picked up a lot of readers over years because of that more than much as anything. I know the Express is a similar size, but that is trash, isn't it?
No, so, it's fucking shit. Yeah. We've moved quite far from eating, but I've really enjoyed it. Thanks. If there was nothing else left in the world to eat, would you eat a person?
Do I know them?
Let's say no.
No, then.
No, you still wouldn't. You only want to eat someone you know?
Well, if I didn't like them.
I see. You'd eat an enemy.
I don't know. It's not. I guess you probably. You probably would, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Like, I think you'd probably just sort of, you'd make a pact, wouldn't you, that you wouldn't eat each other, and then you would both secretly try and kill each other, like when the other person wasn't looking.
Do you know what? I go full circle on this question. The more I ask it, the more I change my opinion on what the answer will be. At the moment, I'm thinking, and this is easy to say when I'm full, because I'm not empathising with myself very much when I'm desperately hungry, where I think I'll eat anything. But if there were just two of you left and you did know each other, like enemies or not, I actually think, in reality, if you were still rational of mind, that I think I'd rather than have the potential trauma of eating it, killing and eating a person, and then dying anyway, in the next few weeks, couldn't we just arrange to kill each other? Is there some way we could, there's two of us, where we could do a kind of mutual throat slitting?
Yeah, and then when they did it, I'd eat them. I mean, it depends what the circumstances are, doesn't it? If you know you're going to get potentially rescued from whatever the situation is, or whether you are just like the last of people alive after a nuclear apocalypse, and it would be really no point in prolonging it then. But if you think there's a chance of escape, then maybe you would. I don't know.
Yeah, you never know.
You're supposed to only be a few steps away from barbarism, aren't you? Like, that's what they.
I can imagine that. I've got myself in some pickles in heat at the moment, driven by.
Also, if you were the last two people alive and you were spending time with each other, you were probably driving each other nuts. But
actually, you might want, like you say, depends who it is. You might want them dead to the point where you'd savour every mouthful.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question from one of my listeners? This is from Jodie Eckhart. Would you have? You've got the choice of two things. If you could have a physical kind of immunity to any down or upsides of eating, in the sense that you could never become overweight or underweight because of eating, you could never be ill because of eating, you would never get heart disease, you know, any sort of foods that could add to your cancer, whatever. So food can have no ill effects on you whatsoever, at all, but food then tasted of nothing forever, or was like intensely bland. Or you could have still taste, but obviously all the pitfalls that come with food as it is, or reality. What would you choose?
I would pick the one that doesn't make me ill. And I can.
Would you?
Yes.
You'd have immunity.
Yeah, because I would just have to get pleasure from, you know, music and sex and stuff rather than.
That's fine. You'd have. You'd honestly have food as fuel rather than absolutely. Over being able to taste it.
As much as
that was such a quick decision.
As much as it's like a, you know. sensory pleasure every day and enjoy the food. If that was the option, I'd take that in an absolute heartbeat.
Like, wow.
One of the main reasons why I stopped eating meat was because I was scared of cancer.
So, okay.
As well as agreeing with the ethical things generally anyway.
Would you say you're on a spectrum of hypochondriacal or...?
Oh, definitely, yeah. Absolutely. Like,
fascinating.
If someone said to me tomorrow, you know, you can't, like, that's going to cause problems in later life, like, some research came out, I would just cut it out of my diet immediately.
Really?
Like, if they could definitively say that, then no.
But they change their mind every day on what gives them cancer.
No, I'm saying if they definitively.
Oh, okay.
If someone
fine.
Said. I mean, I've cut asbestos out of the diet years ago.
Jodie, that is a brilliant question. I'm going to ask it to loads of people because I think when people decide something that quickly, it's a great question.
I'm in my tummy.
A field full of cows is crossing a road just as a van full of chemicals, which, if they touched each other, would blow up. And would you believe it, a helicopter full of children Trump had clawed from their parents, about to be reunited with those parents, are all heading for the same collision point, and only you can stop it. You've got a one-use-only time machine, but to activate it, you need to do 8,050 squat jumps, Peter Brush, which is a disgusting amount and could fell an ox. But... you do it! You're a hero! You manage it. You do the extreme feat of fitness.
Which is
and
not
everyone is saved. No! Everyone is saved. And you're very heroic. You're allowed a shower or whatever you want to feel kind of normal and happy again. And your reward is the feast of your dreams. There are no limits. Reality gives no bounds. The answers to this do not need to be practical or reasonable or sensible or possible. Humanly, they don't even need to be humanly possible. I want to know what you're eating, what you're drinking, who with, and where.
Well, I've always thought I would like to eat as many corn on the cobs as possible.
Okay.
I mean, I used to sort of say that would be an ideal last meal, like if you were going to get sort of
killed. Yeah.
You know, because you wouldn't have to live with the after effects of having pick loads of corn out your teeth and
fair
and
enough.
Stuff, and also the, you know, toilet after effects of that as well. And so I'll probably stick corn in the cob in there. And who would it be with? Probably Leonard Cohen. corn on the cobs with Leonard Cohen in his house in Hydra, which is, I think, a Greek island, isn't it?
Nice.
Where he used to do a lot of writing, where he wrote Wire and So Long Marion.
Wow.
So I'd have corn on the cob, but then I'd come in there and we'd have coffee afterwards and I'd treat myself to a cigarette with him.
I love it! Yeah.
Thanks so much to Peter Brush. His stand-up is so brilliant, you should go and see him. He's up in Edinburgh right now with a show called Chasing Snails, and he has a podcast of his own, which is a series of very, very short, very, very funny monologues, which is called Peter Brush, A Life Misremembered. That's available in all the usual places. He's on Twitter as @Peter_Brush, and everything he's up to, including access to those podcasts and everything, is all on his website, peterbrush.net. Follow this podcast if you don't already. It's @TheHooveringPod. Shout about the podcast. Thank you, thank you, thank you if you are doing that already. Rate, review, subscribe, and just think of someone who might like it and tell them. I'd love that. If you've got spare money, you could help me financially as well keep this all up and improving. I'm on patreon.com/TheHooveringPod. And follow me too. I'm @JessicaFosterQ. Email me through my website, jessicafosterq.com. I love hearing from you. Oh, and also that website is where I list my gigs. I'm going to be working up lots of new material from the autumn. So if you're London based or indeed any other places as well, I'm in Newcastle, I think, at some point, then I'd love to see you at any of those too. Hoovering is produced by Emma Corsham and the music is by Mike Greenway. Until next week, happy hoovering.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.